Good afternoon. This is Lloyd Moss speaking, and presenting at this time a special feature of your City Station's second annual American Art Festival. This afternoon, by transcription, we're taking you on a tour of the Seiji Gallery. And to guide you through the gallery, here now is Mr. Ladislaus Seiji, director of the Seiji Gallery. Good afternoon.
How do you do?
Why, first of all, I think we ought to talk a little bit about the gallery before we get onto a personal note and talk about you as an individual. How about that? Will you tell us how it happens that a gallery in New York City specializes in African art?
Well, I tell you, it was quite a venture on my part to start the gallery, but the answer is very simple. I love it. I have an awful lot of fun doing it, and I thought that probably there are some more people here in this big country of the United States who might feel just as I feel. That is to say, that African art gives a tremendous emotional thrill.
Mm-hmm.
You see, on that basis, because it's actually a human connection with the sculpture, I thought that there was a justification to open it. But probably you wouldn't know that. What I know is that this is quite a unique gallery, not only here in New York City, but also in the whole world.
Really? You mean it's the only one of its sort that specializes in African art, huh?
That's correct, because there's a lot of gallery which handles sculptures or handles primitive art, so-called primitive art, including South Sea or pre-Columbian. But I am specializing only in African art because I feel that there is such a tremendous material here that you have to know the thing. You
Absolutely.
Have to study it. By the way, if I may place a little plug here, I have a book which will be published by A.E. Wynne in spring called African Sculpture Speaks.
Consider the plug placed.
Well, you know, after a while you have to take a break, you know, when you have such a wonderful station before you and such an understanding interviewer, Mr. Moss.
Why, we're blushing, Mr. Seiji. I imagine that in your background there's probably some little sort of a clue as to this love of African art. Do you want to tell us something about
it? I tell you that that clue becomes extremely simple. By the way, there is two answers, a simple one and a complicated one. So let's start with the simple.
And gradually work our way up. All right, fine.
Oh, maybe we will skip the complicated one. But anyhow, here it is. I was just a young kid, about 18 years old, when I went in Germany into an ethnological museum. They called them Völkerkunde Museum. And I saw in one of those little showcases an African statue. It simply gripped me. It simply gave me such a tremendous thrill that no other work of art has really moved me emotionally as much as this one. So I said to myself, something must be there. And you know what happened?
No, what happened?
Here comes the complicated answer. I spent about 26 years of figuring out why I was moved. And that answer becomes so complicated that I had to write a whole book about it.
And that is the result of this book, or rather the book itself resulted in that 26-year-old action, huh?
No, I would say this. The book is the result to find the question why I was moved. Now, to give that answer, that is the complicated one.
I hope it wouldn't take you 26 years. This is a 15-minute program, unfortunately, and I don't know if we could delve into it fully. Were you interested in art at the time you saw this bit of sculpture?
I tell you, I am again giving out here another secret, probably for you, that I was an active painter. And I had here in New York City 8 one-man shows, which, you know, generally means something in a painter's life.
Absolutely.
And so that I was quite interested in art. I collected also French modern paintings, of which I have still a nice collection. Then, once here on that very broadcasting station, I was interviewed on account of my collection of insane paintings work.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I was always in the art field. I was writing also quite a lot, not only about African art, but about art in general.
Yes. Are you from Germany originally, Mr. Seiji?
Oh, no. I was born in Hungary. And I left way, way back. I don't want to tell you, because people are figuring out how old I am.
No secrets divulged.
No, and then I lived in Paris for 18 years, and since 36, I'm in this country. I'm a solid citizen.
You look like a very solid citizen, sir, if I may say so. Were you then painting at the time you were in Germany?
No, I was studying. I was quite young, and then I went back to Hungary, and then I came to Paris. There I began to paint. And also one of the little secrets of my career is that I was always a fashion designer. You know, painting, not only in this country, but also in Europe, especially in Paris, you can't make a living very easily on that. So you have to find little ways and means, you know, and one of them was fashion creation.
Yes.
But what happened actually now? I opened that gallery about a year ago. As we say in French, on revient toujours à son premier amour. So I went back to my first love, which was African art. And I can make the statement, which is, I hope, not too boastful, that I was able to make out of a hobby a profession.
Well, that certainly isn't boastful. I think it's a wonderful thing. The one driving element in everyone's life is to try and earn a living at doing what he loves doing most. And if you can truthfully say that you're so terribly in love with African art and have managed to turn it into a supporting profession, why, I think it's absolutely wonderful. And then it probably contributes a good deal to the livelihood of a good many other people. How about that?
Well, I tell you, on this call, I cannot be so affirmative because most of the people I'm in contact, they are not suppliers. They are rather buyers.
Mm-hmm.
Because the supply question is a very intricate one due to the fact that in Africa, they don't produce anymore the type of sculptures what I handle. I handle only what we call genuine antique sculptures on account of the infiltration of the Europeans, the missionaries, and so forth. That whole art really died out. So presently, what I have in the gallery are really old pieces, irreplaceable, and the only way I can get them is from old collectors in Europe.
Well, that is the only way they'll come to your gallery?
That's the only way, and sometimes I have to put up really like a detective, you know, to work out who might have one, who might have a collection, how to find it, and again, that person who might be an old colonial may not know, as I know, the artistic quality. He just grabbed them, you know, during his stay as a curio, as a exotic object.
Yes.
Now, within that collection, I have to make a selection also, which one lives up to an aesthetic or plastic quality.
Yes, I can see that. Do you travel around to get these
Well, I do quite a lot. I was just in Europe, just returned about a month ago, and I was making a very interesting survey, not only in the exhibition hall, but also in the basement of the British Museum, of the Musée de l'Homme in Paris, and the Musée de Terburen, which is for the Belgium Congo.
Mm-hmm.
So I was able to get a very interesting comparative material in photographs. This was mainly for my book. But at the same time, gives me a very interesting documentation to compare certain objects, what I have, with the object which are registered in the museum.
Yes.
So because one of the things which we are so much interested is, which tribe in Africa has produced that particular sculpture? Because each sculpture has what we call a stylistic landmark. So, for instance, if I would show you, like this one here, for instance, you see there is a Baoulé mask.
Yes.
The Baoulé mask has certain incisions on the coiffure or the hairdress, and also a certain elongated nose and a small little mouth.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you compare this with this one, you can see that both have the same stylistic characteristics. So that we are able to make attributions.
Mm-hmm. You mean discover, for example, what period it came from or what tribe produced it?
The tribe. The tribe we know very well. About the period, we have very little knowledge because there is no written history in Africa. You see, actually, the Europeans came in about 75 or 50 years ago and didn't find anything but the product of that time. Now, what happened way back, 2,000 years way back, we don't know.
Yes.
They had no documentations about
mm-hmm.
it.
What?
So there is another thing, too, you see. Most of the objects are made out of wood. Other wood, on account of climatic condition and termites, is very easily disintegrating in the tropics. Exception to that is, as you see in this corner, the Benin bronzes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, these are made in the lost rocks technique, and obviously they have been able to survive the damaging effect of the climate.
Yes. Well, now, by the state of the material of which the sculpture is wrought, can you not have some sort of idea of the age of that piece of sculpture?
Now, that is a very provocative question, because that involves to know which tribe used the sculpture to which purpose.
Yes.
Now, for instance, if something was an initiation ceremony mask, like this one here with the red face,
yes,
that comes from the Bapembe tribe in the Belgium Congo. Now, this was cast away after the initiation took place and probably left on the ground. Now, obviously, that was exposed to quite a lot of climatic damage. But this one, as I mentioned to you, the Baoulé, that was kept on the family altar in the hut, representing the ancestor cult or the ancestor spirit.
Yes.
So consequently, if something was kept and cherished in a hut, protected from the sun and rain and so forth, obviously has a much better condition.
Surely,
but it doesn't mean yet that this one is older or more recent on account of the condition of the wood.
That is what creates this great problem for you. Is that the idea? But how do you know, for example, that this certain objet d'art was preserved by being placed on a family shelf? Do you actually have backgrounds on all these
things? Definitely. Movies? We know the different customs of different tribes.
Oh, that's where
there's a lot of field report. By the way, in my book, I am using a bibliography of about 290 books and articles, which I had to read in four languages in order to get the proper background material. Mm-hmm. So because I wasn't in Africa, very mainly for the reason because you can't find anything now there, I was consulting all the field reports or field studies which had been made way back.
Yes.
So my present experience is based upon those studies of field searches.
Mm-hmm.
But here is one thing, and I imagine that our time is running down quite a lot, is the idea between African art and modern art.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that comes very often up, at least here in the gallery, that people are asking, how's about it that they look so modern? They look so abstract, just like modern art.
Something like a circle in history where you return to the old once again, the cycle keeps repeating itself. Is that the idea?
Well, not exactly. Not exactly. The idea is very simple, and put it very, very briefly, is that the African wanted to express an idea.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea generally was an abstract one, like, for instance, the spirit of the ancestor. You don't see it. It's abstract. So consequently, they had to use a plastic language or forms within that mask or within the statue, which were abstract.
Mm-hmm.
To put simply, for an abstract idea, they create an abstract form. Now, in the modern art, you have the same idea. They don't want to be visual, with other words, what you see, but they want to put down what they feel. And feeling, obviously, is an abstract idea compared with a visual reality.
And then we can almost say that persons' feelings and moods don't change very much in 2,000 years or so, hmm?
Well, if we come to the basic idea, they don't.
And the art is a good indication of it.
If it is expressed, you see, Elie Faure put it very wonderfully. He said there is two type of art. One is the expressive, or the art of expression. Other one is the art of perfection.
Mm-hmm.
When you get into the general denominator that the art is the art of expression, generally it's an idea which has to be expressed. When you get into the period when the idea has already kind of get old, you see, within the people, within the artist, what he does, he hasn't had anything else to say, but he wants to perfect the medium.
Mm-hmm.
So that is the naturalistic type of art, which is the perfection of the medium or the visual reality. The real, what we call haute époque or high period, mm-hmm. is always characteristic that the impetus to create is due to an idea.
Yes, of course.
And the idea searches for a form.
Mm-hmm.
And very often destroys previous forms because that previous form does not fit the new idea.
Yes.
So the African had also a very new idea. What's called animism. Believe that an inanimate object has life.
Mm-hmm.
It's a tremendous idea. I cannot go into it right now, but it has a very interesting psychological implication.
Yes, and probably a lot of these war masks would give the that idea, these masks that are representative of animals' heads with the human being, possibly the witch doctor behind it, to give it life.
Well, you see, we are getting into a very complicated subject.
Well, I'm afraid we can't get very much farther into this complicated subject. It would be wonderful if we could go on. Unfortunately, though, Mr. Seji, our time is running out. So what we'd like to say right now is thank you very much for having us in your gallery and showing us around, and through us, maybe we've brought a little bit of light to some of our listeners out there about African art and about the Seji Gallery as well. Ladies and gentlemen, you've been visiting the Seji Gallery with us under the guidance of Mr. Ladislaw Seji. This has been another of the transcribed features of your City Station's second annual American Art Festival. Be with us again at 4:30, when the next of the festival's features will be heard over your City Station. Your announcer, Lloyd Moss, the program was transcribed, and this is the Municipal Broadcasting System.